This is iFanboy Media Splode, episode 3. TV, I guess. I believe when I fall in love with you, it will be forever. I believe when I fall in love this time, it will be forever. Without despair, we will share in the joys of care. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Splode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
I'm back.
This is the monthly media show that was unlocked by our patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy, in which we talk about things that aren't comic books.
I thought we were just going to do one of these. I didn't realize it was a whole series.
We tempted fate. You're going to be saying that again when we're doing a quarterly barbecue show.
Hey, I'm okay with that, to be honest, because at least there will be meat involved.
Well, no one's stopping you from cooking right now if you want to eat. Although we did learn that we shouldn't eat during podcasts.
Right now, yes, that would be a problem.
I'm going to record this next to the stove as I fry up some bacon.
Don't do that because I'll just stop because I'm really hungry. So we talk about things that aren't comic books, which is what we normally do. And since there isn't a lot of media happening right now, it tends to be very TV focused because that's really all that's happening. And even a lot of that stuff is all screwed up.
Just all screwed up.
Well, we were talking earlier, a lot of our shows are just ending because they didn't get to finish shooting them. So there's awkward season endings. One of my favorite shows, Billions, only shot half its seasons, but they started airing them for some reason. I don't know why they started doing that. So it's all screwy, but we have things to talk about. And as always, we'd like to start off the show by talking about what we've been streaming in quarantine since the last episode. And Ron, why don't we see you start and tell people what you've been watching?
Well, I know a lot of people take opportunities like this to, you know, watch, you know, stuff they've never watched before, go deep into the archive, or, you know, I feel like everyone on my social media feed has watched in April, watched The Sopranos again for some reason.
I made it through the first season.
Like, I don't understand. Like, was there some sort of call to action for everyone to watch The Sopranos? Well, it was crazy.
I mean, I could tell you my thing was that, A, I had no energy. So I didn't really want, every time I started something new, I was like, I don't care. And two, like, there's so much stuff. Like, I just want to watch something I will enjoy. And so, like, that's one of my go-tos. I had just watched The Wire again a couple of months ago, so that was up in the rotation.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not one of those people. I have a hard time with going back in the past for some reason.
Wait a minute.
I don't want to. It's ironic.
That's your whole brand.
No, I know. Yeah, but the thing is, when it comes to watching things, I feel like I'm wasting my time if I watch something I've watched already. I don't know if that's...
Like G.I. Joe?
How much of Star Wars do you know line by line?
A lot. But everyone's been watching Empire because it's the 40th anniversary. I didn't watch it. I haven't watched Star Wars in ages. Maybe I should watch it.
You don't like watching things when you're told to watch them. Being like, everyone's watching Empire, I'm not going to watch it.
No, that's different. I mean, I'm not watching Empire because everyone decided, you know, like, because everyone's doing the 40th, you know, I'm not one of those people who's like on Star Wars Day, I didn't sit down and watch Star Wars because it's a stupid day. And it's based on a pun, which is just moronic. But what I am doing in this time is actually taking the time to go back, like a month and watch the TV shows that came out that I didn't watch when they were originally on that I wanted to catch up on. And I found myself kind of falling on Hulu to FX. Been kind of alternating between two series, one being Mrs. America, which is the 70s period piece that is tracking the Equal Rights Amendment following Kate Blanchett, who's playing a conservative right-wing woman who led the effort to stop it. And on the other side of it is Rose Byrne as Gloria Steinem. And several of the episodes were actually directed by the directing pair who directed Captain Marvel, which I didn't realize until I was watching. I was like, oh, cool, look at that. So I've been watching that, alternating with the series Devs, which is by Alex Garland, who's the guy who did Ex Machina and Annihilation, you know, those movies.
Well, that makes sense because any ad I saw for Devs, I thought, is this an Ex Machina show? Because it looks like it's shot the same exact way with a very similar art direction.
Oh, very much. I mean, like, yeah, it's definitely got it's similar to when Mr. Robot came out. Like, I love the shots and like long lingering shots and like a great, you know, kind of the attention to the design and element and stuff like that. But and Devs is basically it takes place now at a tech company in the Bay Area, which on brand and that sort of thing. But at its heart, it's a murder mystery that's uncovering in the backdrop of this tech company. Not Jose Offerman, that's the baseball player. Who's the
Nick
guy
Offerman?
That, Nick Offerman plays the Steve Jobs like head of the company. Both have been equally intriguing to the point where I'm not a binge watcher. I'm not a sit down and watch everything in one sitting or that sort of thing. Me and my wife actually will watch one episode. We'll have dinner, we'll watch an episode, we'll go to bed. We'll wait a couple of days, we'll watch another episode. We've been alternating between those series, and you know, at least for me, I know it's the right kind of TV series when in between watching episodes, I'm like thinking about the next episode and actually can't wait. And I'm like, oh, can we watch an episode of that? And you know, and I like to build that anticipation of the next episode and then talk about it for a while and analyze it and then revisit it in a few days. So that's how I've been spending the past month on those two shows. And I highly recommend both of them.
Where are they airing?
Well, they were on FX. Now you can catch them on demand on Hulu. So yeah, that's what I've been watching on Hulu with no commercials.
That's a good segue to mine. Having finished the Outlander binge-a-thon, needed something light and less disturbing. So watching Parks and Recreation, which was one of my favorite sitcoms of the last decade or so.
There's our through line, Jose Offerman.
Nick Offerman. Hopefully Josh has a Nick Offerman show next.
I want to know why you keep calling him Jose.
Because he was a baseball player.
He was a great pinch hitter.
Not everyone in the house had seen before. So it's been fun to remember how storylines had conflated in my head or things happened much quicker than I thought they did. And it's one of the best of that sort of era of NBC comedies that was happening. It started in, I think, 2008, around there. Sort of that mid-decade period of NBC comedies.
Did you start with the first season?
Yeah. It wasn't as bad as I remember it.
Okay.
It definitely isn't as strong and isn't as wacky. And they haven't found their tone, and they have the useless character of Mark, but I was bracing for, like, a boring slog. And there's only, like, 6 episodes in the first season.
Yeah, sure.
It actually wasn't as bad as I recall. It levels up, you know, noticeably in every way by the end of season 2. It's still a little shaky in the beginning of season 2. It's not quite as stark as The Office, but it was similar.
Yeah.
Great cast. Paul Rudd just showed up. We're on season 4 right now. It's just everyone nails it. And what's interesting also is the cast, other than Mark, is pretty much there almost the entire time. Even the background players who become more foreground players later on are there from the very beginning.
Am I interesting note on the show?
Never seen it.
Never watched a single episode.
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm not saying it's bad or good. I just completely, I was on track 4. That show was on track 3. I just never got on board.
It was really your kind of show. Really good show. And one of the things that's interesting about it is that, sort of like The Office, you know, like a lot of careers were launched
yes.
out of that show, like astonishingly so. I mean, Chris Pratt becomes a huge star after that show in a completely different vein than he was in that show. It's like the most anti-typecasting I've ever seen, you know, and then you have
Nick Offerman. Ansari.
Yeah. Retta, you know, she's got a career now. Aubrey Plaza.
Yep.
And it's funny because I kind of miss seeing Amy Poehler.
Yeah.
You know, she's around, but I think she's probably doing mostly producing stuff now because it's obviously hard to star in and executive produce and, you know, be the head writer on a show like that. But she's real good at it.
She's terrific in that central role. I mean, this was like that also that period where people were coming out of that great cast of Saturday Night Live and getting projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of them are showing up in, you know, Will Forte showed up and Andy Samberg showed up before Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is done by the same people who did Parks and Rec. So it's a connective tissue piece to that early 2000s SNL time. To people now who are in shows like Devs that Ron are watching.
Yeah.
I love it. I love all those characters. It's got so much heart. It's really funny, but it's got a ton of heart. Even the characters who you think are assholes have a ton of heart underneath.
It's true. And it's sort of a tonic for everything else that is happening. I mean, it really was like these are people who are trying to do good, you know, in a tough situation in government. And it's a microcosm of that, but still.
Yeah. And it also helped, you know, I won't say revitalized Rob Lowe's career, but certainly sent it on a different trajectory than it was going at the time. It sent him off into the comedy vein.
He just keeps finding new ways to sort of be relevant and interesting again. He's very good at that. He's excellent. And Perkins.
In case anyone listens to the podcast, this is why Josh and I constantly say Mike Perkins whenever he comes up in a book. He has astonishingly bad hair throughout much of the show.
Interesting.
Rob Lowe. Yeah. He tries like a... almost like a Justin Bieber-esque sort of Beatles-y thing, and then later on he's got like big poofy hair. I don't know what he was thinking, but that's basically what I've been doing for the most part. Probably going to do, I think, Rome next, because I haven't watched since it was originally on.
I went back and watched that a couple years ago. It's great. Probably better than you last remembered, is my guess.
I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, you should be. I have two. One is my wife and I started watching What We Do in Shadows after I realized that everything from FX was on Hulu. It hadn't been that way before.
You can thank the Walt Disney Company for that.
Can I?
All right. Yeah. Calm down.
Can you get me an email address so I can more specifically direct it?
I can route it. I can definitely route that.
Thank you. So
I'm all about Hulu these days. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Yeah. I guess we can thank the Walt Disney Company for that, too.
Or Rupert Murdoch. Take your choice.
Anyway, I had never seen the movie What We Do in Shadows. I'm a bigger Taika Waititi fan now than I was. Thor Ragnarok is my favorite of the Marvel movies. I love Jojo Rabbit. And I watched Flight of the Conchords, the pilot, the other day, and it was a rough looking show. Yeah. I had no, it was like, it was in HD, but I was like, holy shit, this pilot was shot with nothing.
Oh, they had no money. They had no money.
None. Yeah. It was still funny. Like, it doesn't matter. Anyways, What We Do in Shadows was a movie, and the show is created, executive produced by Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement. Wait a minute, is that right? I think it is right.
Well, they did a film, so that makes sense.
Yeah, when I saw the trailer for it, I saw that Matt Berry was in it. And because of Toast of London and several other things, when I see Matt Berry, that makes me want to watch the thing. And my wife and I started watching it, and it's a little bit of a slow start. But over that course of the first season, like, we were so excited. This is what Ron was saying, like, can we watch another one? There is. And then we finished them all, and it was right in time for the second season to start. And so we've been watching, like, oh, it's out this week. We have a new one, you know, that like TV used to be. Yep. And it's gotten so funny. So like, it's just one of those, this is way too clever and interesting. And also just a new spin on stuff. You know, I couldn't tell you a show that this is like, you know what I mean? You've got Matt Berry, and then I don't know the actors' names, but there's basically three other vampires who live there. It's like the best thing. It's the best thing about this pandemic so far, as far as I can tell.
It's funny because when the first season came out, I was like, ooh, I want to watch that. And I just never got to it. And yeah. And then the second season came out, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to get to it. And I knew it's a short episode run, right? It's not like
12,
10, yeah. 10. I was guessing 8 or 10 or so. Yeah. But so, and I'm like, okay, I'll get to it. But then to see the wave of like people realizing it after season 2 and it just got renewed for season 3. I'm like, oh, I need to watch it. I'm glad you're watching it because it's definitely, you know, Matt Berry, Taika, like those are all people that we like and follow.
I mean, like it's one of those things, like it gets better. Like it wasn't bad to begin with, but it's at awesome. First you're not sure what you're watching. But they, you know, there was just a couple of minor characters that got better roles that they improved them over time. And so now there's a lot of stuff that's worth watching. It's just really funny. And the other thing is, I'm not a sportsman, as you guys know, but if there is an area of sports that I am aware of, it was late 80s to mid-late 90s NBA basketball. I had watched that a lot when I was in high school, and I knew a lot of the things. And whenever there's a 30 for 30 documentary on those, I make sure to track it down and watch it.
Some might say the last good era of basketball.
I would say that from a place of ignorance. So I started watching The Last Dance. I wasn't sure I'd be able to, but apparently ESPN.com, maybe I have an ESPN, I don't really know. I have like 10 channels, it might be one of them, I'm not sure. But I'm able to watch it over streaming, and I was thrilled. So I think it's 10-part series,
yep.
each episode's, it's an hour and a half, like they're long episodes. It doesn't actually go in a straight line. It doesn't really like, here's Jordan at the beginning, here's this. They jump around a lot.
It's about Michael Jordan.
It's about Michael Jordan. When I watch that stuff, the game footage from that era, like I'm 100% like all about sports again. It's the weirdest thing. And I remember all of it. I'm like, oh, right. I fucking hated the Knicks. You know, like,
who did you root for living in Maine at the time?
I was a Bulls person.
Front runner. Not even a Celtics person.
The Celtics weren't great. Super like the fact is, if you look at it now, like Michael Jordan, those were just a shitload of fun to watch then, you know. Sure. Just like 5 years before them, the Lakers were a shitload.
But you
of fun
also then. Had like, I don't want to derail this discussion about the NBA, but sure. Like you had like 5 legitimately good teams back then, so that meant that the playoffs between the Bulls, the Pacers, the Knicks, the Rockets, the Pistons,
the Suns,
the Jazz, mm-hmm. You had like a legitimately entertaining playoffs because you had like all these Hall of Fame guys, all these like sort of all-time players playing at that time.
Totally. And it took a while for a team to become dominant. Like I feel like Jordan was one of those first ones where, you know, like, oh, this is the best player, and everybody knew, but his team around him wasn't that good. It took a long time to sort of work that out. That doesn't happen now, as far as I understand. Again, speaking from a place of ignorance. But felt like a really long time back then before, you know, the Bulls got past the Pistons, and then that was a thing for a while. it is just so much fun to watch. And also, you know, like, that's our, we've talked about this with us, but that's, you know, the era of my, you know, adolescence and teen years. It's very specific sense memory kind of stuff. I think I'm only about halfway through it, but I'm kind of savoring it and sort of going slowly. But, you know, like, it's a ton of fun to sort of watch through all that. So I also then subscribed to ESPN Plus because it wasn't working one day. And I thought, oh, and it turns out that The Last Dance isn't available on ESPN Plus because it's supposed to go to Netflix in July, blah, blah, blah. But then I found myself with all of the 30 for 30 docs available for at least the next month. And I was like, all right, I'm in. So trying to go through, like, seeing which ones I've watched, which ones I've missed. Which
it's one of my favorite things about you is your, like, weird hidden enjoyment of sports documentaries. It's interesting because you have basically no time or inclination to enjoy sports now, but yet you will watch all the 30 for 30 documentaries. You'll watch Ken Burns baseball. You'll watch The Last Dance. You'll watch any sports documentary you can get your hands on.
I like the story, you know, like sports, when they have a story, that's a different thing than just like watching the game where I can't get myself excited to watch something I don't really feel strongly about. And it's interesting because when I was a kid, I felt strongly about it. And if sports made me feel the way that, you know, basketball did in 1993, I would watch sports, but they don't. And after that was over, I tried to watch basketball. I just didn't care anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting. But, and also I do find there, you know, there's a social and historical component to, you know, sports documentaries and things like that. So when you put it into context, that's why Ken Burns baseball is so fascinating to me, is that it tells you so much about what the world was like then. And it's the same thing, you know, like with Michael Jordan, you're like, all right, he was the most famous person in the world for a while. Sports Eddie Murphy or vice versa.
Does this documentary address the reason why he had a Hitler mustache in those Hanes commercials?
I don't think it gets into that. I don't think anyone knows the answer to that.
Because if you ask me, there could be a documentary just about that topic.
I think he's a weird dude.
Well, he's definitely a weird dude.
No, I know, like, but, like, you know, there was his image and then there was who he was. And he was one of those people who was very, like, do you remember what Seinfeld used to be like when the show was on? Like, he didn't give you anything of himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? He was very enigmatic.
He ate cereal. That's all you knew.
Yeah. I think Jordan was a lot like that. Like, he, and he didn't want to be famous after a certain point. Actually, they remind me of each other. It's actually a scene where they meet each other. Like, it's like 98. Jerry goes into the locker room and they have, like, kind of an awkward, kind of a familiar conversation. I was like, this is just weird. It's all this amazing footage.
Speaking of Seinfeld, watched his latest comedy special on Netflix. I did watch that.
Did you like it?
I enjoy his comedy. It's always good. The wordplay I like his unique take on our social mannerisms and the words that we use, which that whole bit was very funny. But what I thought was most shocking was he revealed that he's 65 years old.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Which is insane. Looks great for 60.
Don't even think about how old Larry David is.
I can't
like
even.
He's like 80.
But he looks it. That's the thing. I believe that. Seinfeld, yeah. I was totally in shock. Yeah, it was enjoyable. I didn't enjoy it as much as the one that with the little bits about his childhood on Long Island, because I thought that one was just like fantastic from all in. Some of the bits I'd heard before, like they were reworked bits and things like that.
At first I went in sort of, I'm not sure I love him now.
He's very cranky. He is old and cranky, and like we talked about this with Comedians in Cars, where like the last two seasons was him just complaining about comedy to other comedians, and I was like, all right, maybe you need a break.
Yeah, but so I went to watch it, and I was like, I don't know, and at first I was like, this isn't great, and then as he kept going, like it got better, and then there were some bits, you know, in sort of the second two thirds that I, you know, genuinely big laugh, really enjoyed it. So it was pleasant.
It was interesting though, because my wife and I were talking, because there was a whole section about marriage and relationships and all that sort of stuff. And he was saying how like the unspoken language between, you know, married couple, and, you know, I hear a lot about my tone and I can't speak like this in my house and blah, blah, blah. And it's like the things that we say when really inside we're just all we want to say is, I hate you. I was like, yeah, no, I don't hate my wife. I have a hard time. This ran into, we watched the Mike Birbiglia, I can't pronounce his name.
Birbiglia. I was supposed to go to, I had front row tickets for Birbiglia's show that was on last night that I didn't get to go to. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mike Birbiglia did a one-man show. It was all around the experience of having his daughter with him and his wife. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there was, and actually my in-laws told my wife that, like, oh, you guys need to watch it. You'll love it, because it's all about first year of having a baby and stuff like that. And, like, I actually, like, straight up don't like the dude now because I did not like what he said in the thing. Like a lot of like the assumptions about how awful it is to have kids and you know, the experience as the dad, and it was all like real negative dark shit that hasn't been my experience, which I feel, you know, completely lucky and blessed about, but it actually soured my opinion of both the work and the person because like I just don't like that attitude. Like it's just
so I saw that show a few years ago when he was working it out. And Lindsay and I went, and we had the best time and thought it was funny. So my question is, do you not like me?
Well,
that's a different show. That's the final show.
I know what you're saying. It's funny because you're like, well, it's funny. This. I was like, and I just thought, and what I did think was, like, you haven't been married that long.
I don't know. It's just weird how, and maybe this is how life experience changes you and things like that. Maybe, you know, having that your own personal context and stuff that you like the comedy that you can relate to versus stuff that is just objectively kind of funny. And, you know, it gets very complicated, but it's the visceral reaction I had surprised myself.
Yeah. You're not a Birbiglia person though.
I enjoyed the movie where he was sleepwalking. I enjoyed that one.
I mean, but like his stand-up is a certain kind of thing that I don't think. It seems to be your bag. Super self-aware, reflective, like tiptoeing, realizes he's kind of an idiot all the time, and he's like, that's not your thing.
No, I like wordplay.
He likes puns.
I do. I'm telling you that whole section in Seinfeld special, the one about him growing up, where he's I grew up on Long Island. I didn't grow up in Long Island. I grew up on Long Island. And then we get on the train to go into the city, and then you get off the train to get into the cab, and like all this, like all the. It's funny because it's how we talk.
Oh, do we? What's funny is I don't remember that at all or particularly like it, but the part about how he acted with his wife I thought was really funny because I thought it was pretty honest and open for a guy who's never, ever been candid about anything.
Yeah, but I just thought it was really kind of unbecoming and just not like, oh, you don't have a good relationship with your wife then.
That's not what that...
That's not...
Yeah, that's what I took away from it. I did like the whole bit in the beginning that he said about how going out and being social, you spend all this time talking about and planning going out, and then as soon as you get there, you're planning leaving. And that whole section I thought was very funny.
Tell you what, instead of the bit being about your wife, have it be about your podcast partners and see if you look at it differently.
probably not. Maybe. I don't know. Well, I love you guys.
There you go. There it is. Yeah, but that's a long time and maybe not always in the middle.
We've mentioned a couple of shows in passing the last couple of episodes. We wanted to take a slightly deeper dive into staying at Hulu and starting with High Fidelity.
Telling you, Hulu's the next big thing. Even Jose Offerman thinks so. So, yeah, so I know last time we did this, we talked about Almost Famous, and to keep in the theme of a bunch of middle-aged guys who grew up in the 90s talking about music-based media, but Hulu, we talked about it briefly in the last one, is that we enjoyed the serialization updated version of High Fidelity, which took the book based on Nick Hornby, and that was everyone knows about the movie that starred John Cusack and kind of reinvented it as a record store in Brooklyn with what's her name, Zoe Kravitz, right? Yeah, Zoe Kravitz in the lead role, so a little bit of a gender change from the main character.
Well, a little bit.
Well, yeah, no, completely a gender change.
It's a full 180.
Which also didn't matter.
That's a thing, yeah. Well, I was like, no. I just said no. And then Lindsay started watching, and I came down, and I found myself like, huh. And over the time of watching it, to me, like, I mean, on paper, that should not work at all.
Especially
considering how closely it really hewed to the, like, there's dialogue straight out of the book and straight out of the movie.
Well, that's my issue, is that not only is there dialogue from straight out of the movie, but there's also line reads straight out of the movie. Yeah. Like, yeah. And so what I found so weird about it is that, like, and we actually had a long conversation about this, because, you know, in the history of storytelling and performance, you know, like going back to Shakespeare and all this sort of stuff, is that, you know, the same pieces get performed over and over again. Like, there's a reason why, you know, West Side Story is, you know, had opened up on Broadway before the pandemic hit. And it was a more modern, you know, version of the previous West Side Story. And you have revivals all the time. So the concept of doing things again isn't, you know, completely, you know, crazy, but usually what you look for is how do they do it differently or how do they reinterpret it? And my thought was like, okay, you have this opportunity to take this text and you're going to bring it over. So make it your own. Don't do the line. Don't Zoe Kravitz. Don't do the line like John Cusack did the line in the movie. That's just going to remind me of the movie.
Fair.
I didn't have that That's problem. Fair. No, I don't think you're wrong. But as I watched it, I thought, I doesn't matter. I still like it. Okay, well, just to, like, to get to her, Rob in the movie is a schlub.
Yeah,
like Rob in the movie is a schlub. He's kind of a losery guy, and it's, you know, he's at that age. It's just gonna.
I don't know if that's accurate. I think
he's kind of cool and funny.
He's about 5 to 10 years past his prime, but he's still
right. So it's just gonna get worse. Is the point?
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's going downhill, and there's a couple of lines where she talks about how she's playing, and I was like, "You're actually one of the most beautiful women in the world," but she was so good that she kind of sold it anyway. Like, yeah. I bought it out of her, and I find that amazing. I thought the people that they chose to do the Jack Black and other guy roles were really interesting.
Agreed. I really like the other guy role, the demure employee who became like, I would watch a whole show with that guy about that guy.
Yeah. I watched the movie, and like, they're both getting to the same place in slightly different ways, but it works in either case.
The way I described it to you guys, and basically my kind of evaluation of it, is it felt like watching a really good cover band, but then maybe 6 songs into the set, you notice the guitarist is doing something a little, you know, new and on his own, sneaking bits in there, and you're like, I want to see more of that. That's that was my kind of takeaway from it. Like, I really liked the content, but there were little, and the fact that because it's a TV series versus the movie, they're able to expand bits that got compressed in the movie. They worked in an entire episode of a scene that was completely cut out of the movie about the record collection, the Too Good to Be True record collection.
I've read the book.
It is in the book. Yeah. There's a throwaway line in the movie where he refers to it. So it's present in the movie, but you know, it's literally just one line. So I like that I felt the expansion of the story allowed you to get lost in that kind of world for longer than the movie could. That was my complaint with the movie. So I thought the movie was too short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. I was interested in how much, because I watched the movie after I finished the show just to sort of see some of those parallels, and there are way more of them than I was ready for, I think. One thing I thought that was interesting is that the music that they are obsessed with in both is basically the same.
That was another weird thing, which is that there's no way that a record store in Brooklyn today that they're focusing on is so entrenched in the music.
The stuff that you and I like.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's weird. Like, it's like,
especially one that's owned, especially a store that's owned by a late 20 something and employed by 20 somethings. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure those people exist, but the customer base can't be that. I mean, it's thrilling. Like, maybe they would have a place that has Minutemen posters all over the place.
Well, I was going to say, whoever did the set dressing is clearly one of us, because there were Fugazi records on the wall left and right. And
there was Brains poster in the middle. There was like everything on the walls. I was like, I like all those bands.
Connor, what did you think of it?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you didn't watch any of it? Oh, I thought you did. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Will you watch it based on this discussion?
No.
Oh, interesting.
I'll watch the movie again.
Do you like the movie?
I love the movie and the book.
Why wouldn't you watch the TV show?
Because I had no interest in watching a remake of it.
You know what's interesting, though, is that I think that Ron actually hit on something that, I don't know, you sound like it didn't work for you, but it kind of works for me, is that if you look at it like a play, if you look at it like a different, you know, there's 1,000 performances of a Shakespeare play, in that way, it's kind of interesting. It's a different production. They're putting it up.
Yeah.
Which isn't the same thing as like Gus Van Sant's Psycho, which was like, we're doing a remake shot for shot. It was, that's like these people's interpretation of that thing at a different time with different people. And I think it's just surprising like how well it works and how compelling it is. I was like, I need to watch another one. This is great.
I'm so beyond convincing other people to watch it, like, because I'm tired of it being done to me. But I will say this, Connor, which if you're looking for something, I think one of the best aspects of it was that they were half hour episodes.
Yeah. Mm.
And so, like, you got in and out in, like, in 26 minutes, and, like, you got a condensed little chapter of the story, and it always felt like – it felt like enough. It felt, like, nourished and didn't really take away – you know, like, I do think while I went into it similar to Josh, we're like, there's no way I'm going to watch this. Oh, my God, that's awful. I ignored it for the first 2 months that it was out or whatever it was, and then just, you know, not having anything else to watch. And we're like, yeah, let's try this. And the fact that it was a half an hour, I was pleasantly surprised. And by the end of it, actually was like, I don't know how this is going to end, because I know how the book ends, and this is a TV series, and there's supposed to be a second season. So I now want to see what the next season is like, because we're into unknown territory almost.
And then you end up with the second season of The Handmaid's Tale, which everyone hated and no one talks about anymore.
Oh, well, I didn't watch any of the first.
My point is, when you move beyond the source material, you end up in Rocky territory.
Fair.
Not always. I mean,
usually.
The Fargo TV show. I mean, like, it can. But
that's different because it wasn't based. That was just the idea of Fargo, not like based on a source material, though. You know what I mean?
If you don't want to watch it, it's fine.
Exactly. Whatever works for you. I still haven't watched The Wire.
And don't watch it.
This is all everybody digging in now. Like, I'm not changing what I think.
Ron, so over on CBS All Star Trek, we have Star Trek Picard, which aired earlier. And I guess, surprisingly, I found, in looking, you know, getting ready for the show, surprisingly controversial, even though everyone I know who watched it loved it.
You know what I loved about Picard's existence was that I saw comments in my social media feed from friends and unknowns alike that were devastated by the existence of this.
It's weird.
They're saying, I can't believe Patrick Stewart let this happen.
What?
The show that he executive produced and clearly was involved in the writer's room, like clearly had a hand in the creation of, right? And people who were like, yeah, Picard's great if you're into fan fiction. And like, just like all like it was so funny to be able to just revel in the repulsion of so-called diehard Star Trek fans.
One reason why I don't do social media anymore. So this was an 11-episode prestige show set in the original universe, which was part of the reason why it was so great, about Picard in his retirement getting involved in political machinations once again and war with the Romulans. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. It was really nice to be back with Patrick Stewart as Picard. It was really, really, really nice after years of the Kelvin universe and Discovery and JJ to be back in that original world with those actors playing those characters. It felt like a warm blanket being pulled over me again. You had Data and Riker and Troy, and you had Hugh and Seven of Nine. You had all these characters back from the original world, the original universe of Star Trek that was so important to me growing up. And it was really interesting and great to see Star Trek shot and written with the care of a prestige TV show, because it doesn't look like any other Star Trek show from that world. You couldn't watch this and then watch The Next Generation and see the visual similarities. This is shot like a prestige drama.
But it's shot like how shows are shot now.
Right, that's what I mean. But Star Trek was 20 years too early for that. So now to be in that world but shot in such a way that where it's cinematic on a small screen was sort of mind-warping. I love this whole show.
Yeah, I loved it too. I mean, both Connor, you and I, you know, relate to our love of Star Trek and every iteration, you know, even though, you know, some being better than others, I still kind of always give it a shot and always like to play with it. I actually really did really have enjoyed the first two seasons of Star Trek Discovery, which was controversial in its own right. I thought this was great. I didn't realize how much I loved and missed these characters until the moment they came on the screen.
Yes. Like, how happy were you the first time Riker showed up?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, there's a moment with Riker. I don't want to spoil it to anyone who's going to watch it. He's a Star Trek fan, although if you're a Star Trek fan, you probably already watched it, but you know what I'm talking about. But at the very end of the series, there's a moment with Riker that I welled up. I mean, it was, you know, it was like the sitting lean that he does. Oh, it's great. I thought it was an inventive take in the universe. I like the evolution that they did with the technology, because one thing that I always love about Star Trek is just the, similar to the shot style that you talk about, how that, you know, this is more, you know, modern television cinematic kind of style shooting. You know, for me, the charm of every Star Trek series is the era it's produced in.
Yep.
The original series had, you know, with its analog dials and all the 60s stuff. And then Star Trek The Next Generation has its own charm of its, you know, everything, solve everything with tachyons and like all the, you know, kind of little bits. And I thought that they added to the lore, they advanced the universe, they introduced new elements and told a Star Trek story that was rooted in the universe that we came to love, and but done in a way that we've never seen before, about a topic that is honestly an extension of one of the subtopics of The Next Generation.
Yes.
You know, in terms of AI and artificial life forms.
What is life?
Yeah, what is life? Data and the Borg and all that sort of stuff. You know, gave us a Borg ship that is manned by Romulans, that is a science center, like different takes on things that were familiar but just slightly turned. And then at the same time, gave you a ship and now a crew that, like, I want to see more adventures with that crew. Like,
I love Rios.
The captain is great. Yes, he was fantastic.
The Latino Han Solo, which is not a character you ever got in Star Trek before. So it's an entirely new kind of person in that world. And he is terrific and clearly can do a lot of accents.
Yeah, it was great. It was really, really good. So, there's season two underway before this all started. I hope they're able to do it. You know, please give us more. Like, you know, it is easy to say, like, having Data be in it or having Riker be in it or Troy and Hugh be like fan service, but it worked. It made sense to the story. Everything fit. Michael Chabon was in the writer's room. Like, yep. These are people who, you know, like, know how to tell story. It was great. I thought it was true to the vision of Star Trek, and I can't wait for more.
And it had a very emotional ending. Again, not to spoil it, when there was a death at the end,
yep.
It was very emotional. I had watched the final episode right before in preparation because I had, you know, it's been a long time. I had forgotten exactly how it ended. I mean, I knew the big beats, but I'd forgotten the details. So I watched it again, and that really actually helped a lot just in terms of, like, emotionally setting the stage for this. When it opened up with that song that's very important to the show and Data and Picard playing, were they playing chess or were they just drinking?
They were playing chess.
Yeah. It's right away, I was like, oh.
Yeah, the show was great. Also of note, Alison Pill was in Picard, and she is also in Devs, which I'm watching on FX. So in addition to Jose Offerman, my through line is Alison Pill.
Nick Offerman.
I only watch things with Alison Pill, apparently. So I'm going to watch Scott Pilgrim next.
As a Star Trek fan, everyone I knew, like I said, in person who was a big Star Trek fan, was loving it. It was all we were talking about when it was happening.
It was great. It's funny because so many people were like, well, I like Star Trek, but I'm not paying for CBS All Access. You know, CBS All Access is not, I know we're going to talk about, you know, another streaming service added to the mix, but like, I have not regretted the CBS All Access purchase.
In fact, I was thinking about it. If I had to get rid of all the services, that'd be the last one I'd get rid of.
I don't know if it's the last one I'd get rid of.
You guys watch TV like old men, though. Like, you love network TV and that kind of stuff.
Maybe.
You get excited for new shows in the fall. I mean, I don't begrudge it for you, but I can't think of anything like that I want to watch on there. But it's not a knock against it. It's just your thing.
The majority of the new content is Star Trek. So if you're as someone who doesn't want to, I'm not surprised. I mean, it has The Good Fight, which is one of the best shows on TV.
I believe you, but it was too far in. What's interesting, though, is like you start off and the people are angry. And I was like, how long ago did Shatner do that sketch?
And it's still true today.
That was 1985, 1986. Yeah,
I know. It's still not like
get a life.
Oh, it's the best thing that ever happened. And no one learned.
In the past, Star Trek fans could just yell at their friends or write a letter, but now it's just they get to congregate in line and make it all worse for everybody. And this is every subculture group: Star Wars, Star Trek, comics, video games.
I will tell you, I just opened up CBS All Access and I hit the movies tab. Just on the top of the movies tab, I see A League of Their Own, Airplane, African Queen.
It's legitimate because now they have Paramount's movies.
Yeah.
Because CBS and Paramount merged. So it's actually a robust. They probably need to rename it because it's.
Yeah, they do. Because it just might as well be for old people.
I believe they are renaming it. They're rebranding it.
It's fascinating to see like Big Night and Bottle Rocket next to Elvis Blue Hawaii, right? And Clockwork Orange. Crazy People, which, by the way, underrated 1980s Dudley Moore comedy that I cannot, like, if you're willing to throw away an hour and a half of your time, it's exactly 1 hour, 31 minutes. Crazy People is a fantastic film. Have you ever seen Crazy People?
I think I saw it a long time ago. I was a big Dudley Moore fan.
Josh, do you know about Crazy People?
I don't know, maybe, but so it's been a long time.
Dudley Moore plays an advertising executive who has a mental breakdown and goes into an institution and then corrals all the other mental patients and forms an ad agency inside the mental institution. And their premise is that they'll do honest advertising. And so they do a tourism ad for the Bahamas, and it's just a man and a woman coming out of the water and says, "Come in the Bahamas." or Jaguar for men who like hand jobs, and like, and it turns the advertising world upside down. It's very of the 80s, but honestly it holds up.
Have you watched this recently?
I don't know if those.
Yes, I have. Within the last 10 years, all the time.
He does it every 6 months. He watches it again.
Daryl Hannah's in it. I mean, any 80s movie with Daryl Hannah.
You know what's funny is you go, it's got to go, he's going to say Daryl Hannah. Because Dudley Moore and Daryl Hannah did several movies, right?
They might have.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So let's talk about HBO Max, which launched this week. Another streaming service. They're starting to pile up. This one is interesting and weird and confusing. It is at its heart Warner Media's streaming service in the same way CBS All Access is now Paramount's streaming service. But they, for whatever reason, and this is just, it just drips of technology corporate executives at AT&T going to a boardroom and saying, let's take HBO's brand equity and dump it on everything.
Yeah.
And thus diluting that brand equity. So it's HBO Max, even though it's Warner Brothers Media. It's also a rebranded HBO Now, because that app disappeared and became HBO Max. Also, you get it if you're through certain cable subscribers. Like, I get it for free from DirecTV. Other people, Comcast, get it for free. And it's the hub for DC and TCM and Looney Tunes and Cartoon Network and Adult Swim and Studio Ghibli and Crunchyroll and Sesame Street.
It is a mishmash of brands. Like, they in the app, there's one section that is like the hub, you know.
It's called Hubs.
You know, the Hubs. Yeah, and it is the most confusing collection of, like, you know, like, to go from Sesame Street to Studio Ghibli to Turner Classic Movies to Looney Tunes to Crunchyroll to, like, it's just like, and above them all is HBO, because that is like the pinnacle. I mean, it's, listen, naming products is hard. I understand that. I mean, clearly we're going to be in a future show, we're going to be making fun of when NBC Universal's Peacock app launches, because I don't see how anybody doesn't just call that the cock for short. And that's not good. But Connor, to your point, I mean, like, you know, HBO meant something. HBO had a position and had a brand equity in culture and in everything, and kind of gave you a sense of it. And part of me, like, who cares? But another part of me wishes that they just called this Max or called it something else, and HBO was just a number and still got to be what HBO means, because now HBO is just diluted.
And especially when you scroll through the app now, you have, like, HBO shows interspersed with, like,
yeah,
Friends and The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and The Big Bang Theory, and these are not necessarily bad shows, but what is HBO anymore? Then it loses the meaning of it.
Yeah, the reason why and again, these are my opinions; these don't reflect my employer. But the reason why Disney Plus works is because Disney operates as an umbrella over Marvel and Star Wars and Disney Animation and all that other stuff, and it makes sense. Whereas this just feels like a jigsaw puzzle that's not together.
I will agree with that, but I will say that HBO Max has the same problem that Disney Plus has, is a lack of content.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, is the idea that it's going to be original content, or is it just a storehouse?
There's a couple of original content shows. There's an Anna Kendrick series.
There's a section called Max Originals, and there are six shows that they launched with. There's Love Life, the Anna Kendrick thing. New Looney Tunes cartoons, which I thought was like a picture of Big Bugs Bunny on a cell phone, which I was like,
oh. They're doing that. They're going a big push in for the 80th anniversary.
A show called Legendary, the Not Too Late Show with Elmo, a documentary called On the Record, and Craftopia, which is like a DIY show. Yeah, no, I agree with you that the lack of content was kind of glaring. But I will say, in Disney Plus's defense, and I know because I'm a big Disney Plus mark, but over the weekend, one of my wife's friends texted her and said, hey, we just got Disney Plus, what should we watch? And we spent about 10 minutes saying, oh, watch this and this and this. Like, as time goes, the content does build and gets there, but at launch it is hard. So I do sympathize with them, as to have enough at launch to make it feel. I mean, the Apple TV section had the same problem, where there was a handful of shows, right? It's like, you know, you can't launch with as big of a library. That's why they're leaning on the Warner library and all these other sub brands to fill out the content of the evergreen,
which makes sense, because Friends was the top show on Netflix. It was the most watched show, and so it's when you log on to HBO Max, literally the first banner is a Friends banner. That makes sense to me. There's a whole Harry Potter section that makes sense.
Yeah, I was gonna say those are gonna probably be the most viewed stuff. Yeah,
you know, for a lot of people, you go to these apps because of the original content. That's sort of the driver that gets you in the door. And you know, after The Mandalorian, you know, there was nothing left on Disney Plus, and there's nothing on.
I haven't been back to Disney Plus since then.
I haven't either. I haven't even opened the app up.
You guys are missing out.
You are perhaps biased.
On what? Disney movies?
No. There's a show called Prop Culture that is like a little mini documentary about finding old movie props and the history of the movies and stuff like that. I enjoyed that. There's a whole documentary series about the making of The Mandalorian, which is good. There's a lot of stuff on here. It's great.
I have not opened the app since the last episode of Mandalorian.
All right, well. There's a Taylor Swift concert.
That's not true. I watched Ratatouille with my kids.
But not only that, for HBO Max, original content aside, they opened up during a pandemic. No one can shoot anything. But it's a shockingly anemic library. Like, if you go to the DC hub, and I didn't realize that there's a lot of streaming rights, and they've licensing to other streaming services, and they've got to wait for those licenses to come back. But, like, There's not a single Superman movie. There's not even the Nolan Batman films aren't in there. There's hardly any cartoons because all the content's on the DC Universe app. Like, I don't understand why they don't just fold DC Universe into HBO Max too, because there's a lot more content. I think Batwoman's the only CW show. There's Smallville's not on there. Like, there's a lot of DC content they've made over the years, and hardly any of it's actually in the app itself. I mean, I was actually impressed with the TCM selection. It's better than I thought it was going
to
be.
I will say I am very excited about having this access to TCM, because that's the kind of thing, like, you know, not having cable, and even though I do have TCM through YouTube TV, just not being of one too ephemeral, like, let me turn on the TV and watch whatever, it is nice to be able to access that archive, because there are some gems in there.
It's just weird. I mean, I realize it's early, it's first week, but it's weird. It's a weird app.
It's funny, I'm going through it because I have HBO, so I guess I have this. And, you know, it mostly looked like the HBO with some other stuff I wasn't really looking for. And then you get to the bottom and it says, it's like, you know, these are the film franchises. And I was like, yeah, cool. I do have all those DVDs. Lord of the Rings, Alien, Die Hard, Jaws, Hair. I was like, yeah, we're good. Like, but it's not like...
It's not overly compelling.
Yeah. No. It is funny because I opened it up this morning or yesterday morning. My wife said, we looked at it, we're like, oh, what's different? It's like, oh, it's purple. Okay, cool. Where's John Oliver?
I still don't know if, like, do new shows pop up on there, like, the day after they air on TV? Like, I still don't know the answer to that question.
Well, it looks like I still have HBO Go. I mean,
HBO Now was converted into HBO Max.
Right.
Well, that's
but
what
I still have HBO Go, which is, it's the day of, basically. As soon as the show airs on HBO, I can watch it on the app.
Right. So, but why have two HBO apps? It's just weird.
Whole thing's weird.
I don't know. I'm not going to complain in that it doesn't cost me anything else to have some more stuff that I didn't have before.
Is Doom Patrol worth watching?
I started to watch the first episode and couldn't finish it, but everyone says it's the best one. I've never gone back to it.
Yeah.
It was one of the DC Universe originals.
Which, why does DC Universe exist?
But, that's my question. I really thought it was going to get folded into, after they killed Filmstruck and then folded it in supposedly into this TCM section, but it's not nearly as much as what was on Filmstruck. I thought for sure DC Universe would get folded into this too. Maybe it still will one day, but it hasn't yet.
Yeah.
The only thing I've watched on there so far this whole week was I watched one of the old Looney Tunes. The one with the two guys wash up on the little island. They see each other as hamburgers and hot dogs, and then the cruise ship comes and Bugs Bunny tricks them into staying on the island. It's a classic.
Classic.
That's all I've watched on there. It's 11 minutes.
Tell you what, there's some stuff on, like, I'm just going through TCM right now. And
it's great. The TCM session's legit.
I mean, yeah, like, there's some really compelling stuff here.
They have, like, all the Chaplin films.
Oh, yeah, look at that. I just got to it. Wild West, Wild Bunch, Once Upon a Time in the West, Searchers, Rio Bravo, Treasure Sierra Madre. I mean, that's some...
It's the best section I've seen so far.
It's got a good, like, 70s section, too.
Yeah.
Like, Harold and Maude, Hard Day's Night, Xanadu, Rock and Roll High School.
Tune into next episode when Josh reads off titles available on another streaming service.
Well, you could tell us some more about what's great about Disney Plus.
It was a weird launch. I'm sure it'll get better, but as all these companies race to get their app out, and AT&T has said that their whole focus now is this app, it was just a weirdly anemic launch.
I think we're in the midst of a whole shuffle thing, and how it shakes out is going to be kind of interesting, really, because, you know, you've had all these come lately apps, you know, and none of them are particularly sticky, you know, like, depending on who you are or whatever, you might have an interest, but, like, I have Apple Plus, you know, there's two shows on there I really want to watch. Lindsay's watching one of them. Like, there's the new Rob McElhenney show.
I mean, Apple's just dumping a ton of money on the world.
Yeah, because they don't have any, it's all original content, but there's not that much of it. Like, there's a couple of great shows there, but is it worth it on a monthly basis? It doesn't feel like it, you know? Whereas, you know, it feels like Disney's main thing is a huge archive of, like, beloved content. And if you're really into that, that's awesome. You don't need to go get your Blu-rays out anymore, or, you know, people have the VHSs. And HBO is like, Max is just like, here are all those things. You like Friends? Just please approve of me.
Pay us.
Yeah. I mean, we couldn't decide, so we're giving you everything we have.
Well, that's what it boils down to. I'll never forget. I wish I remember what year it was. It had to have been around 2005 or 2006 or whatever, but I was talking to my dad about a lot of the new up-and-coming internet stuff and things like that, and he's just like, yeah, I don't know. I think we're gonna be bled dry by death of 1,000 microtransactions. And that's really what is happening, where it's $4.99 here, $7.99 there, $14.99
there. This is $15 a month.
Yeah.
It's comics.
Yeah. I've got Netflix and Hulu and DC Universe and HBO Max and Prime. You know, that's five out of the... I mean, it's just at a certain point, you're going to have Peacock at some point. I'm sure Fox will want its own. You know, like, it's going to be too much. And everyone's trying to beat Netflix. They seem to can't do that, even though that, you know, everyone's taking their content off of Netflix, which it's going to be interesting in about 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely gonna be. I mean, I wish I could even hazard a guess where where the chips lie. But I think it's, you know, it's these moving away, you know, these conglomerates or these libraries that are together and these brands that are in one thing, and then it's gonna become a money game, you know, and you know, and you've got Warner and Disney and NBC Universal and all these kind of big, you know, decades old media companies, and you got an upstart like Netflix, you know, who are just dumping money into it. And at the end, I mean, we're already at too much content. It's a flood of content.
It's like comics when they went double shipping. Like, how much do you remember when you're getting the fire hose, you know, on you? Like, what was the last great Netflix show? I'm not saying there wasn't one. I just can't remember it because there's been 10 shows, not even at Netflix, but everywhere.
Yeah, everyone that's like the thing of the week. There's no, like, great ones anymore. There's no, like, somebody's asked, like, what do you like? I was like, all right, I loved that Fargo show. That was like my favorite thing that I'd seen in a long time. And I can't remember, it was 2 years ago maybe? Like, I can't even remember. It's been so much stuff. I was thinking that, like, you know, you said that if you, the last to go would be your CBS app. Mm-hmm. I think my HBO Go app might be up there for me because one of the, like, there's all the shows, and so you know the original content.
Well, you're not paying for that separately. Right. That's an add-on to your cable.
Right, but if I didn't have the cable, I would just buy HBO Now. I would buy the Now.
Well, that's, again, there's no Now. Max is
HBO
Max.
Max. I know. Wait, are we then? Now?
This is Now.
Now is then?
Let now me is get
this is Now.
This is Now.
Okay, then. But my experience has been that, A, I don't watch TV, so I really only experience the HBO Go app.
Seems like all you do is watch TV.
No, I mean like TV.
Oh, well, no one does anymore.
I do.
Right, and Connor does.
Yeah. Whatever.
Right, so the point being, like, you had the content of all of sort of, you know, some of the best produced shows of the last 20 years. And then, you know, the movie parts were kind of rotating. Like, here's some new things. Here's some weird old things. And it wasn't so much, you know, like it, like Netflix is, there might be cool stuff coming in and out, but I'll never see it because there's too many things. Like, HBO is kind of controlled in that way.
You're losing that now because
yes,
you go to the HBO Go app. And I assume Now was like this before. You just see the HBO shows. Oh, what did I miss this week? Oh, here's the new show from this week.
Yep.
Now it's like you go to HBO Max, and it's like, is this the new one? I don't know. It's in between The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and and Harry Potter. They've diluted themselves. They should just be an HBO section.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, but that, like, I think Now and Go were basically the same thing, as I understand it. Like, if you were sort of working with it, but like,
yeah, but Now is if you didn't have like, I didn't pay for cable, so I couldn't get Go, so I had to get Now. Right. I mean, it was already confusing to start with.
Yeah. Now. Ugh.
Now. When? Then.
When?
Now.
Now. Then.
So
when?
I will say, though, if you do have Netflix, Uncut Gems is now available on Netflix. And if you haven't watched that, you need to watch that movie.
Yeah, and you will watch it one time, and you will never want to do it again, but it's worth it that one time.
Oh, so good. So good.
And also, just the thing that you need more than any of this whole conversation is justwatch.com.
Yes.
You know, you think of the thing you want to watch. So we were just talking about Spaceballs, and I thought, what would I do? I would just go to justwatch.com, I type in Spaceballs, and see where it is.
Where is it?
Yep. And just go wherever it is.
Tell us where it is.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm doing it right now. Spaceballs.
It was just on TV recently. I caught the last like 30 minutes of it.
It is now. You can stream it on Stars.
Stars is always the wild card.
Yep. It really is. It's available for rent on Amazon, Google, Apple, all the other.
I did what you said. I got Stars for a month so I could watch Stan and Ollie. And then I forgot to cancel it before the trial was up. So
yeah,
now
I remember.
Now I've got it for a month, but there's so many things. Like, I'm not going to remember to go back to Stars.
They were just having deals, like $5 a month for 3 months.
Yeah. But I don't need more.
Just Watch. People who like Spaceballs also liked Blazing Saddles.
Well, yeah.
True.
Inner Space, which is a gem of the. That is a gem of a movie.
Yes.
Thank you, okay. Connor.
I didn't say it was bad. I
watched that a year ago.
Other than.
You got with Inner Space, you've got classic mid-80s Martin Short, you've got young Dennis Quaid, you've got Meg Ryan, and America's you've got Sweetheart. A lot of Sam Cooke songs.
Yep.
That's a great thing. But they also like The Dark Crystal, Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie, and Rogue One.
Wow, that's
that algorithm's all over the place.
You know what this whole streaming thing feels like? It feels like I have this cabinet and it's full of snacks.
Yes.
And then somebody comes up and like, dude, we have way more snacks for you. And I'm like,
I liked these snacks though.
No, I really like the snacks that you have, but I have so many fucking snacks. And I don't know if you've noticed, I'm gaining weight rapidly and I have a cholesterol problem. Like, but how about more snacks? And then behind them, a giant truck pulls up and like, $5 for a year for all of these snacks. And I'm like, please leave. Stop coming here. And then they just drop off a bunch of snacks. Like, I didn't pay for Disney Plus. I didn't pay for Apple Plus. I'm not paying anything extra for HBO Max. They're just leaving. My yard is full of snacks. And I'm like, I'm going to have a salad. It's too much. So that's why I watch The Sopranos again.
I get you.
That's literally it.
There's less cultural stickiness to any of these shows. Yep. Because no one's watching. 5 million people here, 3 million people. Everyone's in their little bubble niche, and there's no stickiness to the culture or anything.
Well, it'll be interesting because, you know, like we, very broadly generalizing, but like our generation will have like our touchstones. We'll have our Simpsons and our Seinfeld, and the millennials who are 10 years younger than us are going to have The Office. And the people after that, they're watching fucking YouTube anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yeah.
It was funny because I was literally on a work call earlier today and someone was talking about the ratings of a TV show and then someone chimed in saying, ratings don't matter anymore. And I said, and everything I learned in college got thrown out the window.
Yeah.
Ratings.
What does matter?
Ratings.
Nothing matters.
Nothing matters. And the reality is that I have at best an hour to watch anything on any given day. So it's even harder to find something to fit into that small window.
Here's what I'm really excited for. In about a year's time, 2 years' time, when we're on the Media Splode episode 12 or whatever, and we get to talk about the six-hour Snyder Cut.
That will be a fun time.
Can I tag someone in? I don't want to do that.
I don't think
can we just do G.I. Joe instead? Hey, guys, actually, I got to go and watch G.I. Joe right now.
Oh, shit. I totally forgot about that, too.
So let's do that. So this has been Media Splode Episode 3. Thanks to the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy who made it happen. This is our monthly non-comics media show, so we'll be back next month. Maybe we won't do all TV. We'll find something else. We'll find a movie to talk about.
I would like to do a shared experience for the three of us. So it could be...
Let's watch
like,
Interspace.
I would gladly watch Interspace again and do a deep dive in Interspace.
500 downloads.
Josh won't play along.
Not that. Yeah. It's whenever those things come up, you guys have this big shared experience. Oh, this is great. I'm like, well, I didn't have that experience, so it doesn't mean the same thing to me.
How do you feel about Martin Short?
I'd never liked him until recently.
I knew it. I had to guess. I would say that you were not a Martin Short fan.
No. There's two kinds of people in this world. There's Martin Short fans and non-Martin Short fans.
Exactly. I have always thought that the synchronized swimming
it's classic.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Classic.
I'm not a strong swimmer. I mean, like, I'm not without, we should watch a Fred Willard movie.
I will say,
we should watch Best in Show.
The problem is, no one wants to sit here and listen to us just say jokes from the movie over and over.
Yeah, sure. That's a good point. I will say that there was a span of years, a very formative years, that were spent watching Three Amigos, yes. Interspace, and SCTV repeats.
Well, if you'd gone back in time to that period and asked me who's the biggest star in the world, I'm assuming it's Martin Short, right? Because he's in everything.
Could be Chevy Chase.
No, but like in the future, who's like the most beloved comedian? Well, it's got to be Martin Short.
Yeah. He was so versatile.
They were trying to make him happen back then.
Yeah.
Steve Martin.
Oh, so good. Three Amigos is a gem. Honestly, that is a goddamn American treasure of a movie.
All right. So until next month, we'll be back. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Fucking lousy with snacks. So many snacks.